The views and opinions expressed on my story, Living with Lupus Podcast, represents each person's individual experience. By listening to this podcast or reading our blog, you agree not to use this podcast or blog as medical advice to treat any medical condition in either yourself or others. As always, consult your own physician for any medical issues that you may be having. My Story Living with Lupus Podcast is officially trademarked, all rights reserved. Thank you for joining me for another episode of My Story Living with Lupus Podcast. I'm your host, Susan Hendricks, and I'm so glad that you could join me on this Friday, July 16th, 2021. Today's episode is all about slow steroid tapering succeeds in SLE. Fibromyalgia, likely the result of autoimmune problems, and the latest in healthcare news. Nurse suspended over TikTok videos about patients. Also, I will be telling you about my latest diagnosis. That's right, my latest diagnosis. So, you know what I want you to do. That's right. All the way from the United States to Bangladesh. Get ready to grab your cup of coffee, your cup of tea, and to my listeners late at night, you know I appreciate you. So go ahead, go on, go grab your favorite glass of wine, and come on and join the conversation right here on My Story Living with Lupus Podcast. Ophthalmology Associates, PC, Drs. Berman and Dr. Zuckerbrod, treating diseases of the eye and eye surgery. You can reach them at 313-341-3450. I thank you so much for joining me today. First topic that I will be talking about is slow steroid tapering succeeds in SLE. Flare rates were significantly lower with gradual withdrawal than with low dose maintenance. And this information is coming from MedPage Today. Gradual withdrawal of glucocorticoids was successful among patients with SLE after 2 years of clinical disease without an increased likelihood of flares, Canadian researchers reported. At 12 months, the flare rate among patients who had slowly tapered their glucocorticoid was 17.6%. compared to or with 29.4 4% among patients who maintain a low prednisone dose of 5 milligrams a day. Now, at 24 months, the flare rates in the withdrawal and maintenance groups were 33.3% versus 50% respectively. Glucocorticoids remain the cornerstone of treatment in SLE, not only for the management of active disease, but also as maintenance in clinical patients. A recent randomized study conducted in France found a significantly lower risk of flare among patients who remained on maintenance prednisone compared with those who had abruptly withdrawn the drug, with a relative risk of 0.2. Now, at the University of Toronto Lupus Clinic, they followed a different approach on the glucocorticoid tapering, which mandates a gradual decrease in the daily prednisone dose over many months. This tapering schedule for the withdrawal group was as follows. During the first week, the patients took the usual dose of 5 milligrams per day for 6 days and a reduced dose of 4 milligrams for 1 day. In the second week, the usual dosage was taken for 5 days and the reduced dosage for 2 days. In the third week, the 5 milligram dose was taken for 4 days and the reduced dose for 3 days, and so on, remaining at the same reduced dose until the next clinic visit when further tapering began. This permitted discontinuation of prednisone over 9 to 18 months. Now, to compare the effects of slow withdrawal versus maintenance, the researchers conducted an observational study of patients who had been in clinical remission for at least 2 years with a SLE disease activity index of 0. At the beginning of the study, all patients were receiving 5 milligram a day of prednisone along with stable doses of antimalarials and immunosuppressives. The decision regarding withdrawal or maintenance was made by the individual treating physician. Propensity score matching was performed to account for baseline differences among patients. Flare was defined as any increase except minor fluctuations in serology. In the SLE-DAI, while moderate to severe flares were defined as any increase in the SLE-DAL requiring treatment
escalation or an increase of 4 points or more on the scale. After propensity score matching, each group included 102 patients. The majority were women whose age average 42 and whose disease duration was approximately 12 years duration of clinical remission, which was 3.6 years. At 12 months, there were no differences between the withdrawal and the maintenance group. But at 24 months, rates of flare requiring treatment escalation in the withdrawal and maintenance group were 14.7 versus 27.5, while rates of flare involving a 4-point increase in SLEDAL were 12.7% versus 26.5%. Now, the most common manifestation of flare were cutaneous and polyarthritis in both groups, with no difference in organ system involvement between the groups. Now, an additional analysis of 263 patients who had been in remission for less than 2 years found that the flare rate was the same at 67% in both withdrawal and maintenance groups at 2 years, implying that the duration of remission is a critical factor for successful glucocorticoid tapering, the researchers observed. Now, in conclusion, gradual withdrawal of prednisone seems safer than abrupt discontinuation in patients with clinical SLE and could be attempted because the vast majority of these patients will not develop a moderate to severe flare within 24 months. Now, also, let's note a limitation of the study was its observational rather than randomized design. If you are on any glucocorticoid, have your doctor ever abruptly taken you off? How did you feel during this period of time? And if your doctor gradually tapered the dosage down, which to me seems safer than abruptly taking an individual off, how did you feel being gradually tapering off of your glucocorticoid? I'm interested in finding out. Stay with me, and when we return, we'll be talking about fibromyalgia, likely the result of autoimmune problems. And also, you'll hear about my latest diagnosis in the fight of having lupus. So stick with me. Thank you.
If you would like to appear on an episode of My Story Living with Lupus, you can contact us at mystorylivingwithlupus@gmail.com. Also visit us on our Instagram page and also our website, My Story Living with Lupus.
All right, I'm back. I think I'm going to tell you about the latest diagnosis that, which was given to me. You know, on this podcast, My Story Living with Lupus, I tell my story of living with SLE, along with giving you, my listeners, the latest in healthcare news, cancer research, advancements in lupus medications, and questions that you as a healthcare consumer should be asking your doctors. In one episode, I discuss how lupus can attack the gastrointestinal system. Now, this brings me to this statement. As of Tuesday, I have been diagnosed with gastroparesis, and I have a blood infection, bloodstream infection, that I am currently taking oral antibiotics for. Gastroparesis, which simply means partial paralysis of the stomach. It is a rare disease. There is no cure. My gastroenterologist informed me that it was caused by lupus. Now, far as treatments go, I have an appointment to see the gastroenterologist soon. And as I stated before, right now, I'm on oral antibiotics to try to clear this infection up, which is in my bloodstream. But for right now, I have to eat 6 small meals a day. That's 6 1-cup size meals a day. Now, can you imagine forcing yourself to eat? I have no appetite at all. I have informed my family of this, and they asked me what were the options. I informed them that there's medication. There's also surgery. You know, even though I have gastroparesis and I also have a blockage, I said we have to deal with one thing at a time, and that is clearing up the infection which is in my bloodstream. Now, if someone was to ask me, am I down? No. Am I worried? No. Am I concerned? Of course not. So that's no. Lupus is lupus, you know. You never know when it will strike. But that is the latest of diagnosis that I will have. And more than likely, as I told my family, I will have a hospital visit real soon. but I will continue to do my podcast, to work within my foundation, and I will continue to live my life to the fullest. It is still not a death sentence. You know, if it gets too bad and I have to go on a feeding tube, so what? I'll be on a feeding tube. But there is one thing I do know, and that is God is not through with me yet. When I return, we'll be discussing fibromyalgia, likely the result of autoimmune problems. So, as many of us has been told, it's all in your head. Well, it's not in our heads. So stick with me. I'll be right back. All right. Let me ask you this. Have you ever had a doctor to tell you when it came to fibromyalgia that it was all in your head? Now, new research from the Institute of Psychiatry, Psychology, and Neuroscience at King's College London, in collaboration with the University of Liverpool, has shown that many of the symptoms in fibromyalgia syndrome, better known as FMS, are caused by antibodies that increase the activity of pain-sensing nerves throughout the body. That's right. The results show that fibromyalgia is a disease of the immune system rather than the currently held view that it originates in the brain. The study published in the Journal of Clinical Investigation demonstrates that the increased pain sensitivity, muscle weakness, reduced movement, and reduced number of small nerve fibers in the skin that are typical of FMS are all a consequence of patient antibodies. The researchers injected mice with antibodies from people living with fibromyalgia syndrome and observed that the mice rapidly developed an increased sensitivity to pressure and cold, as well as displaying reduced movement, grip, strength. Now, in contrast, mice that were injected with antibodies from healthy people were unaffected, demonstrating that patient antibodies cause, or at least are a major contributor to the disease. Furthermore, the mice injected with fibromyalgia antibodies recovered after a few weeks when antibodies had been cleared from their system. The findings strongly suggest that therapies which reduce antibody levels in patients are likely to be effective treatments. Such therapies are already available and are used to treat other disorders that are caused by autoantibodies. Current estimates suggest that at least 1 in 40 people are affected by FMS worldwide. That is 80% of which are women, and is commonly characterized by widespread pain throughout the body, as well as fatigue, often referred to as fibro fog, and emotional distress. It most commonly develops between the ages of 25 and 55, although children can also get it. Fibromyalgia is a particularly difficult condition to diagnose and manage because its causes are unknown. This research shows that antibodies found in human blood can cause fibromyalgia-like symptoms in mice, suggesting that these antibodies play a crucial role in the condition. Further research is needed, but this offers hope to the millions of people with fibromyalgia that an effective treatment could be found in the relatively near future. So, the next time a doctor tells you regarding fibromyalgia, it's all in your head, say no, it's not, and research has proved it. Now we're talking about a nurse suspended over TikTok videos about patient. Only thing hurt in her posts were people's feelings, the nurse stated. A North Carolina nurse who joked about mistreating her patients on TikTok was suspended by her employer. Kelly Morris, a nurse at Citadel Winston-Salem Nursing Facility, was temporarily removed from her job after posting multiple viral TikTok videos that poked fun at residents. That's right. They poked fun at resident abuse. The videos, which she posted under the username Bubblegum Kilts, to approximately 32,000 followers, included jokes about over-medicating patients, lying about vital signs, unplugging a patient's ventilator to charge her phone. Morris told MedPage Today that she was notified of her suspension after an Instagram user messaged her on June the 25th, requesting she take down her TikTok videos. Within a couple of hours, hundreds of people started calling the Citadel, Morris said, demanding she lose her job. Her employer took action shortly after the calls came in, Morris said, but she maintains that she never intended to hurt anyone, and her videos were just jokes. Her videos that she stated were just jokes, boiled down to patient abuse and patient neglect. She needs to lose her license after this. She further stated, it was just dark humor. I was just recreating dark humor, nursing memes. Morris added that she did not break any actual policies. There were no violations of HIPAA, and she did not include any patients in her content. The only thing hurt in her TikTok, she stated, were people's feelings. All my videos are comedy skits, she continued. Although Morris has asserted that her videos were supposed to be funny, many are not amused. Whitley Patterson, the daughter of a former patient at the Citadel Winston-Salem, who passed away earlier this year, said that she was very upset by the post. I was very disturbed. No words can express just how that video makes me feel. Misuse and unprofessional use of social media platforms by employees violates the core values of any institution. Morris stated to WX12 that her story is an example of cancel culture. Her original TikTok account has been banned from the platform, but a new account under a similar user name has been created. After her suspension, Morris created a GoFundMe campaign to support her family while she is out of work. She apologized for her bad taste jokes, but stated that she still has children to care for as a single mother. Currently, the campaign has raised $300. Morris further stated she wants to own up to her actions and take accountability for what she did. I do apologize, she states to the people that I offended. She stated to MedPage Today, I was being insensitive to other people's point of view. Well, you guess. What are your thoughts about the nurse who was suspended over her TikTok videos about patients? Now, don't forget, she said the only thing hurt in her posts were people's feelings. Just think about if that was one of your relatives she was speaking of or joking about in that video. Stay with me. I'll be right back. You know, we go through so much in life. And my parents used to say to me, you have two roads to travel. You can go down the one to the left which everyone has gone down, or you can go to the right, the least traveled one, and be independent and not a follower. And everything is not for everyone. Life is just like that. You have your own talents. The next person has theirs. I have mine. Everyone is not meant for the same thing in life. And I was sitting here thinking about Robert Frost's poem, The Road Less Traveled. And this stuck out in my mind. It states that two roads diverged in a yellow wood, and sorry, I could not travel both and be one traveler. Long I stood, and I looked down one as far as I could, to where it bent in the undergrowth. Metaphorically speaking, someone who takes the road less traveled is acting independently, freeing themselves from the conformity of others who choose to take the road more often traveled, generally making their own choices and perhaps leaving a new trail that will become the road more often traveled, until, of course, someone takes the road. I'm Susan Hendricks for my story, Living with Lupus Podcast. Make your own choices. Become a trailblazer and take that road which is less traveled. Have a most peaceful, safe, enjoyable, and oh so blessed weekend. I'll see you next week for another episode.